The following program is being brought to you on the Voice America Business Channel. For more information about our network and to check out additional show hosts and topics of interest, please visit voiceamericabusiness.com. The Voice America Talk Radio Network is the worldwide leader in live internet talk radio. Visit voiceamerica.com. The views and ideas expressed on the following program are strictly those of the hosts or guests and do not necessarily reflect the views and ideas held by the Voice America Talk Radio Network, its staff, and management.
This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. All comments, views, and opinions expressed on the following show are solely those of the host, guest, and its callers. It's time for The Growth Strategist. Here's your host, Aldana Ambler.
Welcome to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler. And each week we rotate through different growth strategies, industries, geographic locations. You know, and this is a peer-to-peer program where the host, the guest, and the listeners are all these presidents and CEOs of companies between 20 and 200 million. And most of you have $1 billion in mind. And then what I want to do every once in a while, I want to introduce a concept or a topic that, you know, is across the board for all of us. It's not just, you know, a specific growth strategy like an acquisition or franchising or something. I want to take on a tough subject of what if you're in a really tough industry? You know, you're in one of the, because a few industries have been taking a real nosedive. And, you know, you're doing a lot of things right, and you're still losing money. So what I did is I wanted to find a couple people who had a really good track record with turnarounds. So a few of the shows this year have been on turnarounds so that you don't just feel like it's growth for the sake of growth. Sometimes you have to step back a couple steps to be able to go forward. So in a few minutes, I'll introduce you to my guest. Have you ever heard of the American Business Awards? They're really wonderful. And so we want to have the national turnaround story for 2008. So that's, you know, get you excited about what we're doing. Okay, so now I've seen, you know, in 38 years of being a growth strategist, I've obviously been walked into a couple of situations where the board or the owners are saying, yeah, we're losing money. I don't even know if we're ready for growth strategies. And let's just look at this and see if we have to do something else first. And there's a few steps that we've had to do when we've been called into those kind of situations. And the first one is just to look at how decisions are made. That's my first piece of advice, is if you're losing money, instead of, you know, rushing to, well, what's the matter with the market, or what's the matter with the pricing, or what's the matter with the product, or what's the matter with, you know, our systems and our technology, it's almost like a blame game when you dive directly into the stuff. And it's harder but more important to look at, well, how are we making decisions? So if you need some training in, you know, how do you weigh the dollars and cents, or evaluating if a market's actually there, or if your customers are truly caring about some of the things that you're spending time, lots and lots of time doing. If you haven't done that lately, that is one of the most refreshing ways to start a turnaround, is to open up your eyes, open up your minds to a different way of thinking, so that when the tough decisions hit you, when you have to face, you know, oh gosh, why are we losing money? And what are we going to do? And stop the bleeding. You all have a level playing field. Because you've been talking about, well, wait a minute, you know, maybe what's important, what's urgent, you know, et cetera, you know, might come out of that discussion. I just find it opens people up to be able to talk to each other and not have it be so personal. All right, so the second thing that I've noticed in turnaround situations is, you know, the decisions are pretty ugly. At least they feel it to people. It's just traumatic. Because by the time you've been losing a lot of money, you know, quarter after quarter, that means that there's been a little bit of avoidance, if not a lot of avoidance, to some of the big questions. So, for example, maybe one of the things that's happening to you is you've been so loyal to a key vendor. You're so entrenched with a primary manufacturer, an OEM that you've been dealing with, and it's so hard. It's almost debilitating to everybody to even imagine. You know, you just watch their body language of, oh, God, we'd have to change from that vendor. You're kidding. Just to research another one and to go through those negotiations again. Plus, it feels like jumping over the Grand Canyon to let one of your big vendors, if you've been very dependent on them for a long time and you're identified by them for a long time, look at people's faces on your team. And that may be, now this is connected to the first point. See, can you see the connection? Because one of your big questions will be, is the product line that we're carrying what the customers really want? And I have found loyalty to, you know, OEMs and really large vendors one of the biggest reasons that companies need turnarounds. Now, how could that be? Why does that happen? I mean, here you have a wonderful relationship. You bend over backwards, you take care of them. You know, you've got the certifications, and you're classified well. How could that possibly be the source of your problem? Well, I want to nickel for how many times it is, because if your primary product line is with one big manufacturing company, now think about it. I didn't even say the name of a firm, did I? It's not an accusation. It's not a put down of anybody. But if they really have you, it's like they own you and they didn't acquire you. They didn't do the transaction. They didn't pay you for it. But every time you turn around, if you really look back and start to think about it, the price went up. And the costs went up. And how much you have to do to please them goes up. And how long it takes you to compensate for what they're not doing goes up. And anybody that has a really major percent of an important part of your business, like they're your primary manufacturer, it whittles away at you over a period of time. And for a lot of people, it takes seeing it into the bottom line before you recognize they got you. They own you, and you're having to compensate for whatever the problem with them is. I didn't name any names. I didn't, you know, cast any aspersions on anybody. It's going to sound like Donald Trump. It's not personal, but it is business. The same kind of thinking is also true related to customers. I've seen some companies where they're becoming less and less profitable, more and more loss, more tired, et cetera, because the key customer owns them. Again, they didn't acquire them. They didn't pay for it. They didn't earn the right to be the ones in control. But if, you know, in some industries, if you have more than 20% of your business tied up in one key customer, you're in trouble. I mean, the clock is ticking about your profitability. So I think about some of the technology companies, if they're tied up with Microsoft or they're tied up with IBM or they're tied up, you know, you name the company, tied up with Kodak or some of the distributors that do office systems, if they're tied up with Steelcase or with Hayworth, any of them. It's no aspersion on any of them. It's be careful how much allegiance you've given to a key customer or a key manufacturer. That sounds easy from the distance, doesn't it? I mean, I have one client who's a distributor of printers, and they were very, very loyal to Okidata. Good company. And they were the ones that were hanging on to the dot matrix printers, for example, that the hotels wanted. But it was extremely important for that company to also go after Sharp and HP and Canon, because if they're going to be a distributor, and they have to have some choice. Now, they still have a wonderful relationship with Okidata, but I can't help but believe that one of the reasons that they have some control over their decisions is that they're not beholden to any one company. Get it? Now, just those two things will start you on an ability to look at a turnaround situation. Who owns us is one of the key questions to ask when you start looking at decisions. Because you may think it's a couple of guys that have been putting in money, or it's a family, or just yourself. You know, on paper, legally, you can see who owns it. But it could be the spouses of the owners, because they're the ones doing the decisions and influencing it. Or it could be their kids. You know, the spoiled, rotten kids that couldn't work anywhere else? And it feels like the legacy of the business is that you owe a job to these kids that wouldn't work anywhere else. They own you. Whoever is actually able to hold you hostage owns you. So it could be a manufacturer, could be a major customer, could be the family of the people who have the pen. So ask the question before you get into which products and what marketing and what branding. Who really owns you and how are decisions made? And you can hear where I'm going with this. I have found that an awful lot of companies need help with that. There are people who specialize in boards of directors that can, you know, dispassionately help a board look at the decisions and make sure that they can be decisive. An outsider often is needed to be able to ask the objective questions. If it's gone pretty far, it's important to clear the base, okay, clear the road, bring in a dispassionate, experienced president for the company, because just having a consultant come in for a strategic planning retreat won't be enough. I mean, it sometimes starts the process. It sometimes wakes people up. Listen to those provocative questions that the outsiders ask. You're not really trying to be provocative. You're just trying to ask, you know, how is this done and how far did this go and did somebody want it and what kind of money did it make you? And it's very offensive. It's very annoying when the outsider asks those things. But it helps, okay? It helps. But if you really, you know, there's a whole lot of stuff going on and you have to make some tough decisions, it might be time to wake up and bring in the dispassionate, experienced outsider, which is who I've asked as a guest. Sherry, are you there?
I am, thank you.
How you like that as an opening, huh? So I said some of the tough stuff. You don't have to reveal it for Clearfield. How's that? Now, I'm going to tell you a little bit about Sherry, and then I'd like her to add, because I only have a couple little paragraphs here. But I'm so impressed that Sherry Baranek, right?
Correct.
Baranek, of Clearfield. Clearfield was smart. You know, they were in the telecommunications industry, and it's like a free-fall time. You know, and surprise, surprise, they were not alone. They had almost a $3 million loss in 2007. That's scary. You know, this is a NASDAQ, you know, traded company, and you can't do that. But by 2008, okay, they bring on, you know, Sherry. With all her experience, she used to be with Americable, and she was in leadership positions with Transition Networks and Tricord Systems and Digi International. I mean, you know, she's got some background in this. And in 2008, she makes it a $1.5 million profit. Let it sink in, folks. Just listen to what I just said. And one of the key things was the recognition, okay, we're in free fall here. This is not okay. Let's look at our decision making. Let's look at somebody who's going to be able to ask the tough questions. But now I want you to hear, what does it sound like? So tell me anything else that you feel that the audience needs to know about you before we get into the nitty-gritty here, like maybe a little bit about Clearfield, you know, what do they do and what do you walk into?
Yeah, well, Clearfield is an organization that provides what's referred to as apparatus equipment for telephone and cable TV companies.
Okay.
And in order to just, you know, take the techo-geeky speak out of it, it basically allows a telephone company or a cable TV company to protect and manage the fiber that goes from their central office to your home.
So is it hardware-related or software-related?
It is very much hardware-related.
That's what I thought I was hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of the phrases that I hear an awful lot in telecommunications, I've worked with the 16 of the majors in their strategic planning, and one of the thing I hear a lot is there's these legacy products.
Mm-hmm.
Was that one of the burdens that you had to look at right away?
Yeah, I would say legacy from a frame of reference of long-term investment in R&D and the mistake of being able to continue to throw good money after bad. You know, this was an organization that had been led by a brilliant PhD physicist had a very, very high-end orientation toward the latest and greatest technology, and you had to lead the market and be, you know, way out in front of the market in order to get a return.
Yeah.
And our challenge coming in was really getting down to practicality, that you didn't have to necessarily beat the market. You just had to meet their needs.
Okay, now I need to go to a break. I got my messages with the producer mixed up, so I'm going to go to a break, and we're going to be more specific about that. This is The Growth Strategist, Eldonna Ambler. We'll be right back.
When it comes to business,
you'll find the experts here.
Voice America Business Network.
Tune into Inner Speak Soul Adventures Talk Radio Show every Tuesday evening at 5 p.m. Pacific Time, 8 Eastern, and learn how to let go of your past and create the reality you desire and deserve, allowing your inner communication to take place more easily without the interference of our noisy mind chatter or your ego. Inner Speak Soul Adventures with Gene Adrian, right here on the 7th Wave Network.
You want to know the inside scoop on how today's leaders do business? How they hire and develop top talent? How do they retain top employees and customers? Tune in to Leadership Leverage on the Voice America Business Channel. Every week, Dr. Robert Denker will offer ideas and facilitate discussion with guests that will help shape today's up-and-coming leaders as well as established leaders in their fields. Listen for Leadership Leverage every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Eldonna can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Eldonna Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast growth companies has really paid off for us.
Eldonna played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company.
We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Eldonna Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ELDONNA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Eldonna Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Eldonna Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Eldonna Ambler, and today we're talking about turnarounds. Okay, now pay attention, because any industry, you know, you're not immune to this. They can have a free fall anywhere. So this one's on telecommunications. It could be some, you know, financial industry. Look what happened in 08. It can happen to any of us when we're least expecting it. And so listen to what it takes to kind of walk in and start asking the tough questions and turn in the Titanic before it hits the iceberg. Or even after it has. Okay, so my guest today is Sherry Branick of Clearfield. And what's really nifty is she turned an organization from a $2.9 million loss to $1.5 million profit. Yeah, was it in a year?
It was.
Cool. All right. Mm-hmm. So now where we left off before the break was that concept of legacy products and operations. Mm-hmm. How did you go about, you know, like when you came in, how'd you go about analyzing that?
Yeah, well, our first step was really to look at manners and behaviors, because the organization had been, you know, I would say, putting all of its investment in regard to technology and not looking at market requirements and looking at it from a technologist perspective, yeah, rather than that of a marketing person.
Oh, gosh, and we've all seen that where someone gets so excited about the innovation for the sake of innovation.
Exactly. And,
yeah,
you know, I've spent the last, you know, the 25 years of my career in technology companies, but I don't have a technology degree. You know, my job I've always viewed as a marketing person, mm-hmm, is to look at the world from a perspective of my customer, and am I willing to buy this, and at what price?
You know, I saw that in the 90s where some of the telecommunications companies, at least the ones doing like the handsets and such, mm-hmm, they were so busy trying to put in all the bells and whistles for different services, you know, and all people wanted at the time was a caller ID, call waiting, et cetera. I mean, just a few, mm-hmm, and they didn't even want the rest of them.
The you know, and that becomes this world of one of the reasons why Clearfield, our, you know, we run the company on core values, and
yeah,
one of the things that I think is very difficult when you're losing money is to take that step back, you know, and you don't want to spend a lot of, you know, time, money, and energy writing mission statements, because,
no,
you know, it just makes somebody else look fun,
yeah,
but and complete a paperwork. But at the end of the day, I wrote the values for this company in the first really 60 days that we were here, and so I did it very non-traditionally, because one would say that you should, you know, put together the focus groups and bring the, you know, everybody together.
No, you had to hurry.
Exactly. And so, you know, I sat down on a plane and I said, here are the six values of this company, and if you're with me on these values, you know, it's going to be a lot of fun. If not, you know, let's go find it. You know, you should go find a different place to work.
So one of my guesses is it wasn't innovation for innovation's sake, right?
No, it definitely wasn't.
That wasn't one of your six.
No.
How did you go about, yeah, I mean, the wonderful, you know, scientists that love their work and have so much passion, they also get really angry,
mm-hmm,
when that isn't the top of the list.
Right. And as a result, sometimes you have to, you know, either change the person.
So what happened? What was the percentages you had to leave?
Yeah, we took, you know, the organization at that time was about 80 people, mm-hmm, and there was about 20 that needed to part ways with the organization.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and those are very difficult decisions on the front end. And, you know, what you end up having to do is really sit down. That's why we wrote the core value, the first,
yeah,
one to be to listen, and to listen to where they're at and listen to where the market was going, but then to make quick and decisive decisions.
Yeah.
And once we had made that decision, it was important for me from a leadership perspective to separate the legacy focus from our future focus.
Yeah.
So
how dramatically different was it?
Very much different in that the Innovation for Innovation State product line was lenses and filters and high-end optics and very, very capital-intensive,
wow,
leading-edge technology with you know, a whole different skill set. And we just,
so you had to say to people that you were just kind of cutting losses?
Exactly, because we had put at that point in time, you know, this is a company that had put $36 million into development.
Wow. And you weren't able to sell those, like IP, to someone else?
No, which, you know, I did make that a focus. I hired a chief financial officer whose sole focus was the discontinuation of that product area and that operation. And part of his responsibility was to identify whether or not there was any marketability for that IP.
Was there?
There wasn't.
There wasn't. Because I've seen scientists, they go, well, if you're not going to do it, I'm going to take it, and they fight for the right to do it.
We were able to, we had an operation that had been put in place to, part of the idea at the time was that we couldn't produce it cost effectively, and so there had been a decision to be able to build a plant in India in order to make that happen. We were able to sell the plant to part of the engineering group and the founder of that division, which was very good for him and very good for the company and our shareholders. But the actual IP of the product line itself, unfortunately, there was no market for that.
It's weird. You kind of hope that some people end up on, you know, on their feet.
Mm-hmm.
But you also have to protect the IP of the company when you're going through stuff like this. So I've seen some nasty legal battles during turnarounds.
Right. And I think that would be a an element that I would want to, if there's any advice, is make the decision thoroughly but quickly. And then after you've made the decision, knowing that it may take 6 months to tie up all the loose ends, take the invest the money to assign that to an individual, probably a totally outsider. To actually do the action. I was responsible for making the decision, and I'm the one that was, with the board of directors behind me, communicating to the individuals who said, we're going to close down this division. But then actually assigning that to another individual, in this situation the CFO, so that my energies could be focused on the future and on growth and not on putting together
all
the
loose ends up. No, that's great advice, because it really is tough, especially if people have been there a long time.
Mm-hmm.
And just, they're hurt, they're insulted, they're angry. I mean, it's just, there's so much passion that goes into innovation.
Mm-hmm. That said, I think there's a level of respect that was given to each of those individuals. And the respect that comes with their contributions and their energies that have been put into it. And so, which really weighs on the survivors. In that it can be more difficult to be a survivor than to be, someone who parts ways, because it now becomes their responsibility. And how are those individuals treated? And the dedication that they had made to the organization. So that would probably be the second tidbit of advice, is remembering that these are all individuals, and somebody's grandpa, and somebody's brother, and everyone's coworkers.
And did you have to get extra HR help during this?
We were able to maintain that on an internal basis, and bringing on an external CFO teamed with a individual from HR that had been with us for a long time allowed us to carry really both sides.
So in a way, you did have some HR help. It was part of your team.
Right. That was part of the internal function.
Yeah, because I've seen some companies that 80 people that went, dropped 20, and they didn't have an HR department before, and they never got anybody to help them when they were going through that.
It's a disaster in the making, because there's just
People are angry,
And you don't, and you can do everything right and still have the lawsuit, because by doing it right, you'll protect yourself in the long term from paying out, but you won't protect yourself from the cost and distractions of fighting that suit. And so being careful, going through the details, making sure that you've got the support to make that happen, and then just treating people with, common decency, so that you don't fuel the fire.
One of the things that I've seen people have to do is more frequent meetings and explanations than they've ever done in their life.
Mm-hmm.
Did you experience that when you were going through the evaluation, to cut off anybody making up their own conclusions about what was next?
Absolutely. And that communication is key, and being able to understand perspectives, and meeting with customers and how that puts it in place. And we actually implemented something at that point that we call a snapshot meeting.
That's a good name for it.
And it's a stand-up meeting.
Yeah.
We have high tables in the center of the company, and they're meant to not last more than 10 to 15 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
And we try to give a day's notice, but they may be, a couple hours from now. And it's just a snapshot report of where we're at, making sure that everybody is, current with where we're at. But then balancing that in that I'm a NASDAQ-traded public company.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to remember that as a public company, we have to be careful of insider information and all those extra challenges that go with that.
Yeah, that's true.
But
if they don't know what they're doing on a day-to-day basis, it makes it worse.
Right. You don't have to communicate financials in order to communicate direction and vision.
Or progress.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, one of my clients called that the slice of time meeting.
Mm-hmm.
At this particular slice point in time, or the slice of, slice of the pie, mm-hmm. here's what we know today.
Mm-hmm.
And what I like about that is there isn't any inference. Everything's all figured out. And it's completely, tied in a bow.
Mm-hmm.
It's a dynamic situation where you're working on it and you're making progress, but you don't actually know everything.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Did your people respond well to that? Or did they expect you to?
Yeah. Well, we had this wonderful opportunity in that there was a very big core part of the company because there really had been two different divisions. There was one division that was very high tech, and that's the division that we were unfortunately needed to close the operation.
Mm-hmm.
The other division was a much less high tech environment, but a very practical division, and that is the division that we ended up focusing upon. And this division had been, which is now what has become Clearfield, but it had been treated like a cash cow operation. This was in 2007. This division had been acquired in 2003, and it had been acquired as a cash cow just to be able to. This poor cow was never fed. But
yeah, to feed the monster.
Yeah.
I know. Okay, yeah, all right.
Of a sudden, the organization had an opportunity to. To really get its wings.
Yeah.
So I was listening to your preview, and you talked about an organization being held hostage.
Yeah.
This was really an organization that had been held hostage by the lack of investment and the lack of believing that this was the future of the organization.
Well, and in some ways, they were held hostage by we have to support this other division, even if we're the ones making money.
Mm-hmm.
Were they surprised and had almost disbelief that they were going to become the core?
I think surprise and I'll believe it when I see it.
Uh-huh. There's disbelief. Oh,
right?
Yeah.
And but being able to become, rather than to go from the cash cow to the core, was a new life and a new opportunity for this organization to really fly.
How many weeks or months do you think it took for them to believe, oh, my goodness, this is real?
I think it really happened within the first quarter. We went from, this is a group that really wanted it to happen, and we made, it was important from the very beginning that we focused on rally. I said if there was three components or three stages of our turnaround, the first was really focusing on the cost cutting or the elimination of the one division. The second area of focus really became the rallying cry. We are the future of this organization. Historically, this division had been could have been immensely successful, immensely profitable, but they would never have been able to cover the costs of the R&D division. And so now, when their actual return to profitability was going to be able to be visible and to be visible on the NASDAQ at a public company level, it became really an opportunity to say, now's your time to shine.
That's wonderful. Now I got to take another break. We'll shift to talking about external communication. This is The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back.
From the boardroom to you, Voice America Business Network.
We're making it easier to listen to the Voice America Talk Radio Network wherever you go. In addition to listening live, you can check out information about your favorite talk show hosts, discover new talk show personalities, add shows to your list of favorites, and listen to all our show archives on demand. All from your iPhone, BlackBerry, or Android. Download it from the Apple App Store, BlackBerry App World, or Android Market, and get ready to tune in. The Voice America mobile app, powered by Aircast.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast-growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
If you currently or aspire to serve on a board or work in a leadership capacity for or with a public or nonprofit organization, where can you turn to get the best advice and practices? How about Leadership Matters with Dr. G? Our program discusses challenges facing both public and nonprofit leaders. Don't miss these practical solutions and tips to enhance your leadership style and effectiveness. Leadership Matters with Dr. G airs live Wednesdays at 2 p.m. Pacific, 5 p.m. Eastern on the Voice America Business Channel.
Voice America Business Network, the bottom line in business.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and today we're talking with Sherry Baranek of Clearfield. And the topic is turnarounds, and several of you are really in a turnaround situation, you just don't want to admit it. So listen to that last segment again, because there's subtleties in the wording. There's subtleties in when she has energy and when she holds back. It's just fascinating. Not to make you uneasy, Sherry, but really, you can tell you've been there, done that. It's real. We talked a little bit about some of the internal behavior, the meetings and the analysis and such. Let's shift to how did you handle the external, because customers had certain expectations. You know, tell me the sequence of how you attacked that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, the first, I took over on the last part of June of 2007, and one of the first things that I chose to do was to change our fiscal year so we had a chance to start over.
Because
it's very important from a measurement standpoint, because our fiscal year has started the 1st of April, and unfortunately, part of the process of a turnaround is you have to take all of your lumps at one point in time, and be willing to say, okay, I'm going to take these losses now, and not continue them on a continued basis.
That's very impressive. I've seen people not consider that.
Very good. So we took all those losses on the front end, and so now the fiscal year is ending on September 30th, and so the 1st of October, we have an opportunity now to have a fresh start.
That's cool.
And so those first 90 days were critical for us to be able to put all of the history behind us.
Yeah.
So that the 1st of October, it was like, okay, guys, no more... no more crutches, no more blame, no more displacement. This is all about us now.
Yep. And what did you say to the customer base? I mean, they must have been seeing, okay, there's losses, there's problems here, and they might even be hesitating buying things from you. How did you handle the customer base in the summer?
We really had a new set of customers in that this is totally creating new type of company, in that the legacy operation that was discontinued had a different client base than the organization, the customers that we were going to be focusing upon.
Did you have to bring in a bunch of salespeople or just shift the responsibilities within the 60 who were left?
Yeah. We started with the 60 that were left to be able to create the the synergy that was there and creating that base. But really the third stage of working with the company was saying we're not going to save our way to heaven.
Yep.
In that this is an organization that had never, had been treated as a cash cow. Nothing was going to change if we continued to treat it that way.
See, I know you went into some niche markets and really worked on branding. Did it start right away?
We did actually already by that fall in that we worked on establishing what our core competency was and who our customers really were all about. And we actually came up with two different styles of customer, and we call them our hometown hero and our cowboy. And
I love the creativity.
Right.
Very good.
And these are both, say in the customer groups that we're looking for. If we can find, the hometown hero is the individual who has always worked with in the community that they're working in, and they want to make sure, and they know they're going to be there for a long time later.
Mm-hmm.
And so any decision that they make in investing in our product line is one that they're going to have to be comfortable with for really the rest of their life.
And people watch what those people say.
Exactly. They're reference leaders, they're opinion leaders, and this is communities that are going to follow through for other different customer sites.
Mm-hmm.
And so finding that hometown hero was really important for us.
Mm-hmm.
The other individual that we really needed to attract was somebody we called our cowboy.
Mm-hmm.
And our cowboy was someone who was willing to buy our product line for what our product line could do, not for the name on the door.
Yeah.
Because
and where you were headed,
and the value that we were trying to be able to deliver. So they were comfortable in their own shoes of making a decision to use the Clearfield product line rather than being having to make a very large company decision, since most of our competitors are significantly larger than we are.
And did you have to provide some language to people, the customers buying, about to deal with any of the objections so that they could get past the worry and move on?
Right. Yeah, well, we really tried to focus on the problem resolution.
Right.
And so, what was the problem that they currently were experiencing?
Right.
And what they weren't being able to get from the competitive offering.
Mm-hmm.
And so going back to marketing training, is, what is your one sustainable competitive advantage?
Yeah.
And so in our world, we were competing against billion-dollar companies who were very large and who had designed products for very large clients.
Yeah.
We instead said, let's find a niche market that we have a sustainable competitive advantage to address.
Gotcha.
So in our world, when we started off 3 years ago, in the U.S. market, there are about 200 million access lines, which are telephone lines or internet lines.
Mm-hmm.
90% of those are controlled by three companies.
Isn't it amazing?
Being
held hostage.
Exactly.
Okay, not bad. Right.
But the other 10% of the market was controlled by 800 small independent telephone companies.
Wow. I didn't know it had gotten up to that many.
Right.
My goodness.
And so that is exactly our market, because I could sit across the table from the engineers at those companies and send my engineers to talk to their engineers and say, what is your problem?
Mm-hmm.
What are you trying to address? And then we were able to deliver a product line that was customized to their application.
So now how big is this, 10%? How many billions of dollars?
This is a couple billion-dollar market.
Yeah.
So
I love it when somebody says, it's 10%. That can't possibly be enough. Excuse me. what if you got your 100% of the 10%? You might be cooking along just fine.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I had a client that one of the ways they described this was they'd go to their customers and say, you're going to be moving faster in the next few years, and we had one thing that was slowing us down, and we need to be moving faster than you.
Mm-hmm.
So here's how we dealt with it so we could be ahead of you again. Now, here's what we're doing. And it was a beautiful way of saying,
mm-hmm.
We had an anchor, we dealt with it next.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just lovely language. And that's kind of how you're sounding.
Mm-hmm.
Did you change the branding at all?
We did. We actually then, in order to continue on that fresh start for the organization, is the first of the year. So now this is 6 months after we started.
Pretty good. I'm impressed with how quickly.
We changed the name of the company.
Did you?
And what was, you know, it's one of those really scary kind of events.
Oh, yeah.
As to, you know, what are you giving up? Who are you going to lose behind?
Yeah.
And but we really felt that it was necessary for us to have that fresh start.
And I want people to hear this because a lot of turnarounds, they are absolutely scared to death. Talk about a legacy thing that freezes them mm-hmm. of a name change.
Right.
And that the market perception, if it would be favorable or not. I've mm-hmm. seen it work both ways.
Right. You know, and we were just, what we knew was important was that we had to communicate why we were changing the name, and we had to continually
mm-hmm.
you know, remind people of who we were and mm-hmm. what we are, you know, from our legacy customer.
Yeah.
But we also knew that we had much more new customers in front of us.
Yeah.
And so we have a year that we're going to continue to use the old name as a backdrop, mm-hmm. And then we'll, you know, drop
that
off.
And
let it go from within it.
I had a terrible middle name when I was growing up and was thrilled when I got married and could kill the middle name forever, permanently, legally. It was gone. Aldana is a different enough first name. Trust me, the middle name is, oh, much worse. And it's kind of like that sometimes. Just let it go.
Right. So we were fortunate to become Clearfield, and I announced it 6 weeks announced it first to the employee community, and it was we did it with a lot of fun and energy.
Yeah.
I think that's important in that turnaround period because it's so easy to get down and the employee community who's been part of it for a longer time, that we really had to each day choose to be happy and each day provide the energy that it needed. And what was really surprising to me is that I might be thinking about something with my kids when I walked into the office, but if I had a stern look on my face, everybody was like, what's wrong now?
Oh, of course.
Right?
Well, you know what I like about the word Clearfield? It mm-hmm. sends an external and an internal message. Mm-hmm. This is, we got a clear field for us mm-hmm. to go and succeed. It's like
mm-hmm.
a big football field.
Yeah.
And the clear word is such a good one for telecommunications.
Well, clear was really for us to be about a vision as to where we were headed.
Yeah.
But field was to represent that we were grounded in the practicality for delivering it.
Yeah.
And
it means something to the customers. Right. That's very good.
You know, and we do it every day. You know, some of the salespeople think I'm absolutely ridiculous, but we go to a trade show trying to be able to communicate that, where, you know, we dress with the vision on top, right? So the guys are wearing dress shirts and ties,
mm-hmm.
But then with the practicality of being able to deliver the solution, you know, wearing jeans and boots.
Hey, do not underestimate.
Right.
If it's consistent, mm-hmm. it's seen.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, yeah.
Right.
That kind of stuff matters.
And so we do have it started an opportunity for us then when I announced it we had an employee rally to announce the new name, and we had shirts made that had a crystal ball, and the crystal ball was the future of Clearfield. And
some people kidding you saying, oh, come on, this is corny, right?
it was surprising that it wasn't, because mm-hmm. Had the presentation and we announced the name, and I really expected kind of a level of,
mm-hmm.
well, we'll see. But I got this instantaneous set of applause from everyone in the company.
Well, you know what? They were in trouble.
Right.
You know, there was a need for relief.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, I've got to go to one break again, but I'm going to ask you what your biggest problem was during this, because it was not easy. My goodness. This is the Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler. We'll be right back with Sherry Baranek of Clearfield.
We're always talking business. Talk to an expert. Call now, toll free, 866-472-5790. That's 866-472-5790. Voice America Business Network.
Do you know that over 70% of Americans with severe disabilities are unemployed? Are you one of the 2.5 million Americans with epilepsy? If you are, or know someone struggling with these issues, tune in to Disability Matters with Joyce Bender. On the show, Joyce will discuss these issues as well as others. She will have on nationally known guests that will offer helpful insight on disability matters and let you, the listener, call in with your questions and concerns. So if you struggle with a disability or know someone who does, listen to Disability Matters with Joyce Bender. Heard every Tuesday at 11 a.m. Pacific Time, here on VoiceAmerica.com.
You want to know the inside scoop on how today's leaders do business? How they hire and develop top talent? How do they retain top employees and customers? Tune in to Leadership Leverage on the Voice America Business Channel. Every week, Dr. Robert Denker will offer ideas and facilitate discussion with guests that will help shape today's up-and-coming leaders as well as established leaders in their fields. Listen for Leadership Leverage every Tuesday afternoon at 5 p.m. Eastern Time, 2 p.m. Pacific Time on Voice America Business.
If you're a struggling business trying to get to the next plateau and would like to learn more about what Aldana can do for you, log on to thegrowthstrategist.com. Listen to some of our many satisfied clients.
We called in the Growth Strategist to do a strategic analysis of our company, design an organizational structure, and improve our management team. The important point is that Aldana Ambler gets it. Her extensive experience coaching fast-growth companies has really paid off for us.
Aldana played a key role in driving the rapid growth of our company. We now have a strategic growth plan in place, obtained growth financing, have a stronger management team, and expanded our services, and are already seeing profits. Companies dealing with business growth issues couldn't ask for a better or wiser business advisor than Aldana Ambler.
What are you waiting for? Call 1-888-ALDONA today and see where your business can go tomorrow. Once again, that number is 1-888-ALDONNA. TheGrowthStrategist.com. Achieving accelerated growth with sustained profitability.
When it comes to business, you'll find the experts here. Voice America Business Network.
You're logged on to The Growth Strategist with Aldana Ambler. Call in right now with your questions and comments toll-free at 1-866-472-5790. That's 1-866-472-5790. Now let's jump into another segment of The Growth Strategist. Here's Aldana Ambler.
Welcome back to the show. This is The Growth Strategist, Aldana Ambler, and we're talking about turnarounds today. And I'm blessed to have a guest on the show, Gary Baranek. And I'm still doing that wrong. Baranek. I think I knew it was somebody who was Baranek.
Okay.
Baranek of Clearfield. And what's really nifty, I mean, you got to play this one again. I mean, how do you turn your company from a $2.9 million loss in 07 to $1.5 million profit into an 08 and get all kinds of awards and recognition? Well, one of the things is clearly move quickly. There is, you know, in the voice and in the answers, you know, you had a sense of deadlines, didn't you? You know, you had to get this done by September and this done by January and move.
I have a reputation of being impatient.
Well, you know, you can't walk into that kind of situation and lollygag. You just can't. So when you were going through that, you've been there, what, 2 years now, 3 years?
Right, we're just finishing our third year.
Okay, so I want to know what the biggest challenge was the first year, the second year, and the third year. Let's start with the first one. During all of that, do you remember?
The first year, I think, was really the we had an environment that we complicated it all by the fact that we didn't have the internal systems by which to grow the company. And so our biggest challenge that first year was the fact that our IT infrastructure couldn't support growth.
That makes sense.
And so it became the need to really look at every system and every process that we used internally. And
did you start investing in IT?
We did. I was very fortunate in the fact that as a public company, while we had lost $36 million over the course of the last few years, the company was not in debt. And so I did have that advantage in the fact that I had no debt infrastructure to
serve. You know, that is the problem with a lot of the privately held companies listening. You know, if they lost a lot of money and they needed IT, you know, what are they going to do? Right. They try to get venture money and outside investment and stuff, but it's really tough until you prove the profit. Okay,
so I did have that advantage.
How about the second year?
Second year became an opportunity for us to really step out from our kind of core customer base and go to a new level of customer that we wouldn't necessarily have been in front of previously.
Now, how much did you penetrate that 10%?
You know, we were in a good position in that of those 800 independent telephone companies out there, we're doing business now in about 400 of them.
Not bad. How about
half? We don't own every product in each of those clients, but you know, we certainly have that goal by which to move forward. But we were in a position over that course of that year to introduce new technology to a new new client community and to get outside of our comfort zone from being that smaller end of the customer. Yeah. And our typical customer was a telephone company that might have 10 to 15,000 access lines.
Right.
And there were many of them across the country. But one of the things that we did when we designed the product line was the concept of scalability. So that I wanted to design a company that would scale from the small to the large so that the investment we made in the front end would pay off in the end.
Yeah, cater to the ones that are serious. I get that. And now, something tells me that you had to do, I don't know why I'm saying this, and tell me if I'm wrong, that you had to really look at your customer service and the pace at which you would work that second year.
Yeah, we did, and that really became the choice of saying, okay, what kind of company are we going to be?
Yeah.
And so knowing that you have to choose, in that you have to choose whether you're a technology company, a service company, or a price leader.
And what did you choose?
We chose service.
I can feel it.
And
something I've told me, you know, that's when it got serious, didn't it, that second year?
It did. It was, you know, you had to have a product line that could compete.
Yeah.
But we knew that, you know, there was $1 billion companies out there that we were competing against who had very high-end engineering. We weren't going to be able to lead the market with the next generation of product.
Now, you know I'm going to ask, did you have to do any churn in employees the second year?
No, actually, we were
full
target.
Gosh, play this back for them because that's amazing.
Yeah. In fact, I mean, we've gone, now fast forward a little bit to where we're at today, and that we were 80 employees.
Yeah.
At that point, I'm 135 today. And are in a position to be able to, you know, as we grow and as we go after new markets, to be able to find, you know, new customers, new, and really changing our skill sets internally. You know, one of the things that we did during that time period was really looking at how to continue our profitability and to really throw out what, I mean, we were a manufacturing company. And so, of course, for manufacturability, you had to look at how to improve your processes internally.
Right.
But we also looked and said, you know, there are some things that we are doing that we just shouldn't be doing anymore.
Yeah, you don't want to perfect in Six Sigma something that doesn't matter.
And so we did start establishing, you know, very core competency specializations with external sources and external resources so that we could deal with our growth without having to put in a lot of front-end people. And
you know, a lot of companies that have gone through that by about that second, third year trying to interface, they bring in an approach like the Mastering the Rockefeller Habits or something like that to have a rhythm. Did you do anything like that?
Yeah, no, our orientation was, okay, it goes back to those values that I started, was our first value was to listen.
Yeah.
And every time that if we fail to get too far away from the listening standpoint, you know, we forgot what we were, you know, the value that we were trying to represent.
Yeah, and I don't mean to presume, you know, to recommend something, but I've seen so many companies going through this kind of stuff. If you ever get tangled up, like in the rhythm, or when should your meetings be, or the pace starts to slow down, get Vern Harnish's book on Mastering the Rockefeller Habits and just look at it and see if it feels right to you, because it sounds like it'd be a good fit. There's no any kind of sales involved here. I'm just saying that might be something that you would want to look at.
Okay.
What's the biggest challenge now?
The biggest challenge now are some market dynamics, and that becomes being a very continuing to reinvent yourself and continuing to being able to understand that sometimes circumstances, you know, the economy and the like can really throw, you know, a curve at you, and being able to continue to be responsive to make that happen. You know, our company is part of the telecommunications marketplace. When the economy fell apart, you know, we were in a position of saying, okay, you know, all of our, we're a very capital intensive product, and what is our customer going to be, you know, looking at? And so we had to refocus some of our marketing materials more toward operational expenditure controls rather than capital equipment.
Yeah, 2008 was an interesting experience, you know, just because of the implosion of financial markets. But I think there's like the second drop as the recession's lingered, that people are being much more frugal about what they're buying.
And, you know, and that in our market, it has been exaggerated based upon the American Recovery and Reinvestment Act, the stimulus fund.
Exactly.
The, you know, of that $700 billion that was appropriated, $7 billion was specifically targeted to our market,
yep,
of delivering broadband connectivity to unserved communities.
But you weren't a specified company to get some of it.
No.
Okay.
But it was our client base.
Gotcha.
is a core part of that target market.
Yeah.
Our challenge within that period over the last year has been, while our clients weren't spending money,
yeah,
while they were watching to see if any of those programs and funds were going to be available to them.
Right.
And so
there's inertia, indecision.
And so everything slowed down.
Ugh.
And so for the first 6 months of this fiscal year, which would have been, because we just finished our fiscal year September 30th,
yeah,
so the first fiscal year, October 1st of last year through April, you know, I lost money as a company for the first time since I started the company.
Oh, gosh.
And
oh, here we go.
We were in this frame of reference of being like, okay.
Well, you know, yep, that one of that questions in the beginning of the show,
mm-hmm,
about who owns you,
mm-hmm,
there's been more than one company that quietly, privately says the government. You know? And they have to actually deal with it, because if it's making people wait and see,
mm-hmm,
too long, that's the problem, not the product.
Right. And as a marketing person, I mean, you like to be able to deal with supply and demand. And then when the government gets involved and creates this artificial market,
yeah,
when you can't predict when that demand is going to come back because,
yeah,
you don't know is creating the, you know, how the supply is being influenced,
yeah,
it puts you into this position of not being able to make
informed
decisions.
I've had a few clients, they actually started to have seminars on how to break the inertia caused by government indecision.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they just come right out to their customers and say, here's how we're all going to get past this.
Mm-hmm.
Just, I mean, you know, who would have thought that'd be their primary marketing technique? So now what are you looking for now? I always like to have the guests have a chance to say, you know, you're looking for a salesperson, you're looking for a big customer, you're, mm-hmm, looking for a new attorney. What are you looking,
okay,
for?
Well, we have the pleasure and the advantage of using that government slowdown to our advantage, because I knew that I compete against much bigger companies,
yeah,
who have much bigger marketing resources than we do. And so we use that time period to invest in salespeople and invest in application engineers, to invest in what I call smart guys.
Mm-hmm.
And so we put smart guys on the road that were able to be able to continue to meet, to continue to listen to those customers, and to recognize and,
yep,
truly understand their issues.
Yep.
So that by the fourth quarter of this year, which ended September 30th, we had more than recovered and,
yay,
actually had, our fourth quarter was our record quarter in revenue and profit.
Yay.
And so I think when I say what we're looking for,
yeah,
is saying always stick to the basics, and use, turn any circumstance,
yeah,
into your advantage.
Are you looking for a few more smart guys to put on the road, or do you?
I am looking for a few more smart guys.
Okay.
We're one of the things we did that we started this summer is what we find. You know, we're still a small company.
Yeah.
You know, we finished the year at $25 million.
Mm-hmm.
But I know that once my product line gets in front of the customer,
yeah,
that I can get the sale. And,
yeah,
so this summer, right, I put a trailer on the road with the product line behind it. I look,
mm-hmm,
like, you know, the Amway salesperson.
Okay.
But, you know, I got smart guys running trailers around the country to show the products.
Cool.
And it
now, do the trailers have all the branding all over it?
We actually didn't do that this summer, but we're going
no
to.
No kidding!
Yeah, it's one of those worlds in which it's like, rather than spending the time to get that all done, we just needed to get the product on the road.
Oh, but you're going to do that now.
We will be doing that this fall.
I can't believe it. I've only listened to you just in this one show, but I can't believe you won't do that. Yeah. Anything that you want to say, like, as a last-minute piece of advice to the listeners going through this, because they may not all have your energy?
I think I keep harping back to the values, but I think,
yeah,
that becomes your driving force.
Mm-hmm.
And our final value as a company is to celebrate. And we have celebrated every success along the way.
Yeah.
And no matter how small or now how large, and that we were able to finish the fiscal year with $1 million profit again, we now are in a marketplace that is going to grow very rapidly. We are well positioned because of what we've done.
Yeah.
And so I would encourage everyone to really look at what do you want to be when you grow up.
Well, you definitely have to celebrate this team, because this is not a one-person change.
Exactly. And celebrate that contribution, and remembering that, you know, you can make, you know, my kids and I talk about choosing to be happy.
Yeah.
And so when you choose to be happy, you know, good things happen as a result.
Now, I'd like people to be able to contact you. Is there an email address or a phone number they can use?
Sure, the email address is probably the best, and that would be first initial last name, so that's CBERANEK at CLFD.net.
I appreciate that. And people who want to reach me, because we get these inquiries about guests and ideas for future people to be on the show. If you know my name, it's easy to get me. The email is Aldonna, A-L-D-O-N-N-A, at Ambler, AMBLER.com. And the toll-free number in the United States is 1-888-ALDONNA. I have multiple companies that just had multiple telephone numbers. So if you're dealing directly with me, that's the number you get. Well, folks, I want to thank my guest, Sherry Baranek of Clearfield. I want you to play this show a couple times, folks. There's a depth in the kinds of rhythm to the language and the sequence of what's being talked about, and the idea of your six values and making sure you celebrate. You need to celebrate a turnaround, folks. You can't just be gloom and doom. Remember that my wish for you, as it is every week, is for accelerated growth with sustained profitability. And remember, the secret is to reverse the phrase. First, you need to know what drives your profitability. Be able to sustain it. Then talk about some growth strategies. And then step on the gas and celebrate the growth. This is the Growth Strategist, Aldonna Ambler, signing out.